Welcome to the Gold Standard here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is Braden Gall, and you can follow me on Twitter at Braden Gall.
And I'm Adam Vingan at Adam Vingan.
There's a little extra pep in the step today, Adam, because the morning that this show is coming out, Thursday, October 14th, is the start of the Nashville Predators season. There is hockey back in Smashville. Fans will be in the building. You will be in the building. Are you excited?
I'm always excited for the first game of the season, and I'm particularly excited because it's the first really full season we've had in a couple of years. When you consider the season being paused and then having the 2020 playoffs in a bubble in Edmonton, and then having a 56 game season last year and not traveling and having limited fan capacity, you know, last season felt kind of fake to me. So I'm looking forward to having some sort of normal season, as close as one can have as a pandemic continues to envelop our country. But I'm excited. Yes, that's my long way of usually as I am long-winded. Yes, I am excited.
Listen, it's a lot of fun. We've got a lot of stuff to do on the show today. We will make ridiculously sure to go wrong, silly official predictions on the division. Do the Preds make the playoffs? We will do all of that later on. We've got some individual predictions for some players, some benchmarks we're going to talk through with a lot of different guys on this team that are critical to whether or not this team is going to make the playoffs and make a run at getting into the postseason. So we'll go through a lot of those names. We will dissect all of the roster decisions that the Predators made, as they head into their first game, of course, on Thursday evening. I've got a theory I'd like to float your way as it pertains to the news that Scott Nickel was promoted to assistant general manager. I've got a theory I want to float and just see how it lands on you. So a lot of stuff to do today on the show. But of course, we've got to start with Mattias Ekholm. So we'll do that in just a second, because before we do that, Adam, we have to remind the good folks that listen to the Gold Standard not only to rate, review, and subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and pay for good journalism. We've got a lot of things we're asking guests to do here. Pay for good journalism from The Athletic, but also that the Gold Standard is in fact brought to you by
Jaspers.
That you still haven't come up with a tagline yet. That's in your job description. It was written down in an email, I think.
Jaspers, where all meals are on Mattias Ekholm indefinitely.
There you have it. Go to Jaspers and just say, put it on Ekholm's tab. I don't know if he's going to like that, but he does like, I bet you he would like Amerigo's, which is attached to Jaspers and is under the same Four Top Hospitality, because isn't his pregame meal like cucumbers and tomato pasta? Like, isn't that Mattias Ekholm's pregame meal every single game? Something like that. He's probably eating it right now as you're listening to this.
Well, all I know is that all hockey players eat like pasta before every game, or steak, or chicken. Well, probably not steak. It's probably too heavy.
Yeah, they got a carb load for the evening's actions. There's a Gold Standard cocktail at Jaspers named after this podcast. It is a whiskey drink. It is very refreshing, quite delicious. Go drink it while you're watching the Predators on the big screen there at Jaspers, of course. Great drink specials, great happy hour, free parking, great menu by Deb Paquette. You should go to Jaspers and check it out. All right, first order of business. Mattias Ekholm, the Predators announced on Wednesday, 4 years, $25 million contract, very similar to UC Saros and Mikael Granlund, $6.25 million annually. He is 31 years old, so that will sign him through, 35, 36 years old, somewhere in there, depending on the length of the deal. What did you think of the number? What did you think of the job David Poile did? I think it's an excellent piece of news that it happened before the season started, so it just gets it out of the way for everybody. I think that's a really good piece of news for both the organization, the players, and the fans. But what'd you make of the deal? What'd you make of the number? Did the Preds do a good job here? What do you think?
Well, I think I may have said this on the show, but I've long predicted that Mattias Ekholm would sign a 4-year, $24 million contract. So I was off by $1 million, which is chump change for Mattias Ekholm now. But there were always two contracts in the NHL that I looked at as comparables for Mattias Ekholm: Jake Muzzin, who was 4 years, $22.5 million, and Jeff Petrie, 4 years, $25 million. I figured Ekholm might split the difference. That's why I landed on 24. He ended up getting the Petrie contract, 4 years, $25 million. So the number came in right around where I expected it to. It was important for the Predators to get this done. Ekholm and his agent, Kurt Overhart, had imposed a deadline with the Predators that if a contract wasn't done by end of business today, basically, that they were going to pause negotiations during the regular season because Matthias did not want to have to worry about them and focus on playing hockey instead. So they grinded through the evening last night to get something done, and they did. I mean, I think it's fair value for the type of defenseman Matthias Ekholm is. You know, one thing to note, as we typically do in these things, is that there are no trade or no move clauses attached to this contract, which we figured would be something that might come up. But the Predators notoriously are very stingy with handing out those clauses. Of course, Roman Josi has a full new movement clause throughout his contract. Matt Duchene has a modified no trade clause in the later years of his contract, and that's about it. So Matthias Ekholm does not get that trade protection. And, you know, I was at the press conference today with David Poile and Matthias Ekholm, and David was talking about how important Matthias is to the organization. Matthias talked about how he wants to spend the rest of his career here, hopefully. You know, I was getting some flashbacks to the Ryan Ellis contract announcement, where basically the same things were said. And of course, we saw what happened with Ryan Ellis. But, you know, Matthias Ekholm is an incredibly important piece of this team. He does so many things that go unnoticed based by traditional statistics, I should say, because he's not a big point producer, but he's an excellent quote unquote defensive defenseman in terms of his shutdown ability. He is a great leader. You know, the Predators had Ryan Ellis as their quote unquote associate captain. I wonder if Matthias assumes that role now that Ryan is gone. You know, I think when it comes to building this team, as David Poile said today, you know, when you're building a house, you know, it's not a good house unless you have a solid foundation, and Matthias Ekholm is that foundation. So all in all, I thought the contract was fair. It was not a surprise for me at all. That they got it. Well, you know, I was mildly surprised they got it done, just because, you know, earlier this week, I was unconvinced that they would. It just sounded like they might have been too far apart. But deadlines work in, work in mysterious ways. Yes. So, you know, everybody seems pleased with the contract. And I think it was a tidy piece of business.
I mean, when they made the trade to get rid of Ryan Ellis, I think you and I talked about this. There's just no possible way that this team could be competitive moving forward if they did not re-sign Matthias Ekholm. Ellis is a year younger, but basically you need one of the two to be on the team. And basically, I mean, literally the exact same dollar figure, right? I mean, you trade Ryan Ellis's $6.25 million contract and you add Matthias Ekholm's $6.25 million contract over basically the same amount of time. And so you're sort of just, you swapped out Ryan Ellis to clear up space to re-sign Matthias Ekholm. And I think Matthias Ekholm is the better, I don't want to say the better player, but he does different things for the team, as you pointed out: leadership, physicality, toughness on that second blue line pair. And so I thought it was, as soon as they traded Ryan Ellis, I thought they had to get this done. And I think that's clear with them making sure they got the negotiations done under the deadline, is that they had to do this. And essentially, if you're a fan thinking about the salary cap moving forward, you just have to say, look, this deal takes the place of the Ryan Ellis deal. For lack of a cleaner comparison.
And you can also factor in the return for Ryan Ellis and Cody Glass and Philippe Myers. So I can't recall what their cap hits are off the top of my head, but basically they traded Ryan Ellis for re-signing Matthias Ekholm, Philippe Myers, and Cody Glass.
Which could be a second-line defenseman and a third-line center.
Well, I expect Myers to be Ekholm's partner on opening night, and I expect Glass to center the third line, as you said. So I'm pretty confident that that's where they're going to play tomorrow, today.
I think by all accounts, that's a good move for the Predators, and fans should be excited about that. If you, when you lay it out that way, I think it's a no-brainer that you had to do it. So, you know, Ekholm gets paid, Predators get some stability on the back end, and you acquire a couple of young pieces in the process. I know it sucks to not have Ryan Ellis around, but that was sort of the price of doing business, because when you have, when you develop a lot of good young defensemen, eventually they're going to go off and do other things. So the real question now is, how does this, what are the implications now for Philip Forsberg's contract? Where are we at with the conversations with the agent? What do the deadlines look like for them? The trade deadline looms very large for this conversation. One more year in his deal. What do we think about what this deal does now that David Poile can shift his focus to Forsberg?
Well, I don't think there's a deadline for this one. You know, I don't think Forsberg and his agent, J.P. Barrie, as far as I know, have not set a hard and fast deadline like Matthias and Kurt Overhart did. And this one's progressing, you know, much more slowly than the Ekholm negotiations, of course. And you know, Philip went into the final year of his previous contract without signing an extension, though that was an entry-level deal, if I'm not mistaken, versus a standard contract like he has right now. And I think Philip understands that if he has a good season, he sets himself up for an even bigger payday. You know, one thing that was noticeable when camp started, when Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm were both asked about their contract situations, Matthias Ekholm was much more direct about, I want to be here, I want to stay here. If it was up to me, the contract would have been done yesterday, versus Forsberg, who said, I have a full year on my contract. I think it's important to play out your contract, things of that nature. You know, it's going to be interesting. The longer this goes, the more worrisome it becomes, especially as we talked about last week. If the Predators get closer to the trade deadline and Philip Forsberg isn't signed and the team is in a playoff race, Do you do what you did last season and hold on to your trade chips and hope that you can make a run in the playoffs? Or do you do the prudent thing, perhaps, and trade Philip Forsberg and reap the rewards of, you know, who, a player who would be a big time rental on the market?
Where do you fall in that right now? Not knowing, I mean, obviously we've got, you know, a bunch of games here to play before
looking at predictions for the season, you know, I don't think I've seen anybody pick the Predators to make the playoffs. And, you know, not that the Predators are reading our press, but, you know, if things go south as they did in the first half of last season, for example, I don't think the Predators can hope that they'll have the same kind of turnaround that they did last year and rising from the dead, so to speak.
Let me throw out a scenario for you.
All right.
Philip Forsberg is dominant, but the team is still way too young to be competitive. It therefore increasing his value to where he probably is not re-signable, but then is very tradable. Is that almost like, I know that's not best case scenario for the team or the fans because they want a playoff run, but is that almost not the best case scenario for making David Poile's decision easier on Forsberg?
Perhaps. It's really hard to say. I mean, I think about how often players get to unrestricted free agency. Some players never get there. I remember Mark Borowiecki, for example, when he signed with the Predators last offseason, despite being a 30-year-old player, had never been an unrestricted free agent. You know, Matthias Ekholm has never been an unrestricted free agent because I believe he signed his current deal before the deal expired. So some players never get that opportunity. You know, Philip Forsberg understands that he is a talented player who can score a lot of goals. He does have his warts, but if he has a big season, you know, will the allure of free agency be too much for him to ignore? And, you know, I'm skeptical that Forsberg will sign before the end of the season, because I do think he wants to leave that door open. Again, I could be wrong. Like I said earlier this week, I wasn't convinced that Matthias Ekholm would be signed today, but he was. But
what do you know?
But at the end of the day, you know, when I think about Philip Forsberg, he's, you know, he'll be in his late 20s. He'll have an opportunity, you know, this is an opportunity for him. He's in a really advantageous position because, you know, this team is entering a transition and it can go one or two ways. If Philip Forsberg likes the direction the team is going in the transition and he thinks he wants, and he thinks that they're going back towards Stanley Cup contender status and he wants to be a part of that, great. If this team completely goes off the rails and they're not ready, and, you know, perhaps they need a more significant retooling than what they did this offseason, he has an out. Like, I think if he's smart, and I'm sure his agent, who is among the most powerful agents in the sport, is telling him this, that you have leave a door open for yourself. You know, if things go well and you want to be here, great, we'll talk. If things aren't going well, you have an opportunity to go to free agency and go to a team that's competitive, that will give you a better chance to win. I actually think it's smart of Philip Forsberg not to commit right now. I mean, the Predators probably don't like that, but I think Philip Forsberg is doing the right thing by him.
The Predators don't like that only if his number is reasonable. If the number is like 6.5-7 million, then they definitely don't like that. But I don't, if they were to re-sign him right now, I'm assuming he'd be asking for a lot more than that. So it, you know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing for the Preds either to have their own door too on this, which is a bad, it's sort of a tricky place to be for both sides. So we'll see how it plays out. It will be the biggest storyline the entire season, though. I'm just going to tell you right now, up until the trade deadline, it will be the thing that you get asked about the most, Adam.
We saw it a little bit a couple of years ago when Roman Josi arrived at training camp without a new contract, and he fielded all of the questions. And as Roman does, he was professional about it, but didn't really want to say too much about it. And then at the end of October of that season, he signed his eight-year mega deal. So is that possible for Forsberg? Yes. But, you know, like I said, you know, if I am Philip and I'm in this position, I'm going to take every, you know, I'm going to take every opening that I can. And he can now oversee sort of his role on this team, which is an important role, where this team is going, and decide, I want to be a part of this or I don't want to be a part of this. So I think, you know, locking himself into a contract before this thing gets started, you know, I'm not sure would benefit him. And there's also the ability, of course, in free agency to listen to other teams and raise your price as a bidding war ensues.
Thumbs down. I've got a theory about the front office in just a second. I want to float your way, but 10 players, if you include Matthew Olivier, who opens up the season on IR on the opening night, 23-man roster, 10 players, 9 really, that are 25 years of age or younger. Philip Tomasino makes the final roster and will play what appears to be top 6 minutes on this team. I was wrong about that. They are going all in with him and Tolvanen and Glass and Fabro and Carrier and Trennan and Cunnan. It's all about the kids. It's no longer like an idea or a concept or it's underway. It is the strategy that they are deploying this year as an organization with John Hines as the developmental leader here. I can't remember a player of Philip Tomasino's caliber starting the season in the opening night lineup without any NHL experience. I cannot remember a player that sort of fits his resume entering game one. Can you?
That's a good question. And you might have to go back a ways. You know, I've written about this a couple of times, but I found an old article of mine because I wanted to see the youngest players in Predators history at the time that they made their NHL debuts. And the youngest player to ever debut for the Predators was Scott Hartnell, you know, all the way back at the beginning of the franchise, because he was a top pick near the start of the Predators franchise. You know, the first guy that comes off the top of my head would be Seth Jones. Seth Jones was the number 4 pick in the 2013 draft. And I wasn't here for that, but I assume he started the season. He never played in the American League. So he started the season here. I mean, he was their last, you know, top pick. I'm trying to think of other ones. I don't think Kevin Fiala didn't start here. I think he went to Milwaukee first. Ellie Tolvanen didn't, you know, he got a game, but spent most of his time in Milwaukee before becoming a regular in the lineup. Victor Arvidsson was the same way. Unless I'm, you know, I might be wrong on some of these and our listeners will be sure to correct me. But I think the last player might've been Seth Jones, but then keep in mind, of course, that since Tomasino was drafted by the Predators, he went back to the OHL, had an 100-point season in the 2019-20 season, was a part of a silver medal winning World Junior Championship team with Canada, then went to the AHL last year, was on their all-rookie team in his first professional season. So he's been trending in the right direction. So I guess
Seth Jones played 77 games at age 19.
Right.
In the first fall he was drafted.
So in terms of a player starting the season with the Predators, you know, I would say it's the most, you know, he's the most hyped prospect since Seth Jones, if that makes sense. Because I'm not including Tolvanen and Fiala in that because they didn't start their careers right away in Nashville, their professional careers. But I guess Tomasino then didn't as well because he spent all last time in the AHL. So I'm talking myself in circles here.
Yeah, but Tolvanen, that's not. I mean, he came here and got into the game as soon as he was eligible, but didn't. It was for a couple of games and then was back at the AHL for a year. So like, again, like to be this age, and I'm pulling up Fiala now because he was drafted in the 2014 draft. And he did actually play one game in 14-15 at age 18. He played in five games between 15 and 16. But we're talking about a guy starting in the top six without a game of NHL experience.
The one thing I remember about Kevin Fiala's first season, that 14-15 season, is he was dressed for the triple overtime game in the playoffs against Chicago. And he played like 7 minutes. Like that game didn't end until after 1 a.m. And I don't think he took a shift after regulation, you know, which was probably smart on Peter Laviolette's part. But, you know, Philip Tomasino is a 20-year-old, freshly 20-year-old kid. He turned 20, I think, in July or August. It made all of the sense in the world for him to be on this team. He's been around the team. He was a part of the taxi squad at various points last season. You know, he lived with Ryan Ellis, during training camp last year. You know, he was a part of the training camp last year. So he's had time around the NHL club. And look, if you're going into a transition and you're going heavy on the youth, it wouldn't have made much sense for Tomasino not to be on the roster. What was interesting to me is yesterday, the NHL sent out this stats package, ahead of opening night. Because, of course, there were two games on Tuesday night. And they had the average ages of every team based on its opening night roster. And for the past several years, the Predators have been one of the oldest teams in the NHL. This year, they're sixth youngest in terms of their average age. It's like 26.85 or something specific like that. But you're right. I mean, think about all of the under 25 players that are on this roster, and some of the players you forget are that young, despite them having NHL experience, like Cody Glass and Luke Cunningham, you know, Ellie Tolvanen, Tanner Jeannot, Yakov Trenin, Alex Carrier, Philippe Myers, Dante Fabro. I mean, some of these guys have been in the NHL for a few years, but they're still young. So, you know, think about the older players that have been on this team in recent years, you know, Pecorine and Dan Hanhuis and Mike Fisher, you know, that skewed that average in the wrong direction.
Scott Hartnell.
Scott Hartnell when he came back. Yeah. So, I mean, the oldest player, I'm thinking of the opening night lineup for today. And I believe it's Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm, who are the oldest players in the lineup, and I think they're both 31. So, I mean, that says something. You know, Matt Duchene is 30, I believe. Ryan Johansson is 29. But, you know, Roman Josi and Matias Ekholm are the oldest players in the Predators lineup tomorrow, and they're 31 years old.
I think it also needs to come along with, like, it's that if you are pointing to the reason, because again, we'll do our official predictions coming up a little bit later on in the show. But if you're looking for a particular reason to be optimistic, to find hope and to get excited about your team on a team that Vegas thinks very clearly is seventh place in the division and is not going to make, you know, get more than 85, 86 points. It's that you have so much young talent to watch develop. But with that optimism and excitement comes a lot of warnings of patience. Like you cannot just like, if one bad week of hockey comes from Philip Tomasino, I do not want to hear radio hosts in this town telling people to give up on him, because that's not how this works. It takes weeks, days, maybe even months for someone to find their footing, develop, grow into a role when they are that young, trying to play a professional sport. And it took Tolvin in years. You know, Carrier's been in and out of the lineup with opportunities to play for 3 years, 4 years now, and now it's finally clicked for him. It's a reason to be excited about the team. It's also a reason to have patience with the team as well.
Well, I think one thing that I'd like to bring up before we go into our predictions. So my colleague at The Athletic, Sean Gentile, he's a national writer based in Pittsburgh. Last week, he unveiled his NHL Hopometer, and he collected votes from every fan base over the course of a week. He received more than 10,000 votes in that week. And using, he says, based on their fan, it's a 1 through 32 ranking based on their fan base, each team's fan base's state of mind. And it sort of spit out an algorithm for the most optimistic to most pessimistic fan bases in the NHL. And the Predators were number 30 out of 32. The only two teams that finished worse were the Calgary Flames and the Buffalo Sabres.
At least we're better than Buffalo.
And to give you a sense, so the cool thing that Sean did was he included comments from readers who participated, and he had one optimist view and one pessimist view. So I'm going to read the two of them for you now. The optimist view says, quote, a fresh young core that despite appearances, I feel will put a good show on. The old guard may be waddling out the door, but what's left is a transitional period of hope. So that's the optimist view.
Okay.
The pessimist view, this team is saddled with bad contracts. Two of its best players need new contracts, now just one. And if they get them, it'll probably be more than they're worth. It's all just downhill. Wish they'd really blown it all up last year.
Okay. I mean, those are two ends of the spectrum. I do find it interesting that Arizona Coyote fans are more optimistic than Nashville Predators fans.
Let's see what it said about the Coyotes.
I just find it interesting that we're ranked below them. Because, like again, the difference is they have a clear path to what they're accomplishing. And that path runs directly through a bunch of garbage records.
Right. I think the one thing that you can at least give the Coyotes credit for is they have a clear plan and they're sticking to it. They traded their assets. They got back tons of draft picks. They took on bad contracts and they're setting themselves up to be in position to get the number one pick last year. Also, they brought back the Kachina jerseys full time. So that also helps. The optimist, I just want to read this because this is funny. The optimist in the Coyote section wrote, optimistic in the long term, but fully anticipate this will be a 5-72-5 season. Kachina's being back and selling every asset is the right move. At least with the Coyotes, especially during the offseason when the Predators hadn't really articulated that their plan all that well, at least you knew what the Coyotes were doing. You know, I think maybe that's why. But that's just a theory.
All right. Well, I think it's worth, you know, Tomasino, I think it's just worth pointing out that how rare what he's doing, what he's accomplished is pretty rare. And that fans need to be patient with it, but there's a reason it's okay to be excited about it, but also be cautious and careful with, you know, going over your skis and overreacting to one bad stretch of hockey or one couple of games. Like, there's going to be inconsistency. That's what the nature of a young team is all about. And John Hines's job is to sort of have that stock market sort of style meter pointed up the entire way from game one to game 82. And that may not mean a playoff run, but we'll get to our official predictions in just a second. So I wanted to just a theory I have, like, I don't know why this struck me, Adam, before we get to predictions here. I was watching the news, or I was reading the news, you know, about Scott Nichol being promoted to assistant general manager. This is the guy who's the general manager of the Milwaukee Admirals, has been the head of player development, you know, in the organization, played for the team, all this stuff. Like, he's a Predators guy, right? And it's not even necessarily about Scott per se, but this question is just, it doesn't feel possible that David Poile, if and when the time comes that he steps away, that they're not going to just hire from within. Is that a weird theory to have? Okay. And feel like, I feel like they're setting this up, and I don't even know why I'm feeling this, but I feel like they're setting this up for a year, year and a half, 2 years from now, whenever it might be, that there's going to be this sort of succession plan where it's organized and this person will step up and they'll take the role. And obviously Scott would be a candidate for that. Right. But it's just, I don't know. It feels like this organization is going to keep it in house whenever that change happens. I don't know why that theory just hits me.
I think it's because, you know, when you think about the Predators front office, there aren't a lot of outside voices. You know, David has been, of course, the GM for the entire history of the Nashville Predators. You know, Jeff Kelty, one of the assistant GMs, has been a member of the organization, if not since day one, very close to it. You know, Brian Poile cut his teeth other places, but has gotten his experience in a front office capacity with his father in Nashville. I mean, when Paul Fenton left to become the GM, the ill-fated GM of the Minnesota Wild, he had been a part of this organization from the beginning as well. And Scott was a former player who's been a big part of this organization, you know, behind the scenes since he retired close to 10 years ago. I might have some of these timelines off, but the point is that there aren't a lot of fresh perspectives, quote unquote, in the Predators front office. It's really been kept in the family for a very long time. So,
Because calls are going to, if they go on a bad streak here and they're not good at the deadline and they don't make the playoffs, people are going to call for his head the entire year.
I mean, you saw it last year. First half of last season, that's all people wanted to talk about was David Poile's job security. So, I mean, I don't think your theory is wrong. I think when you just look at the history of the Predators front office,
yeah,
there's just hasn't been a lot of turnover. I mean, oftentimes, you know, you'll see, you know, other people, you know, you'll see people leave certain job, you know, certain organizations. And, you know, I hate coaching trees. I know this is not a coaching tree thing. I hate coaching trees. I think the Bill Belichick coaching tree has sort of ruined it for everybody.
Front office trees.
Right. But, you know, Ray Shiro was a member of this front office. Then he, of course, becomes the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Then he's the GM of the New Jersey Devils. Now he's a member of the Wild organization. You know, Paul Fenton leaves, goes to the Wild for a year. Now he's a part of the Florida Panthers organization in a sort of, advisory capacity. But, like, you know, it's not as if, though, David Poile has tentacles all over the league in terms of guys that were groomed in his front office. Like, it's been kept, like I [S2] Yeah. [S1] Said, in the family for 20 plus years. So, you know, I would be surprised if and when that day comes, if the new general manager of the Nashville Predators is not somebody already in the organization.
Yeah,
it just doesn't seem to make sense the other way.
Yeah, okay, it's just not even the theory, I guess, just a vibe. And I just was sitting there going, there's no way they're going to go outside of the organization. I mean, I guess they could, and they'll do their diligence if and when that time comes. But it just feels like they're going to say, this is the guy right here. And it's going to be somebody that everybody knows has been around the organization for a long time. That's just what it feels like for me. No inside information there. Complete gut feel.
Just a conversation.
Just pure speculation, unadulterated, irresponsible speculation on our part. All right. When we come back, official predictions for the Central Division and a lot of different players. I've got questions for you, Adam. Forsberg, Duchesne, Tomasino, Tolvanen, Saros. Johansson. We'll get your thoughts on all of that when we come back right here on the Gold Standard on the 440 Sports Network. The Gold Standard, Adam Vingan, is in fact brought to you by
Jaspers,
the next evolution of the sports bar over on West End that has a cocktail named after this podcast.
It sure does. It's called the Gold Standard, obviously. It's delicious.
You're a rocket scientist, I tell you, man. I tell you.
I mean, you're talking to a guy who I took AP math. I took AP statistics in high school.
So you're about to brag to us how smart you are?
No, I'm actually about to brag to you how stupid I am.
Okay, go to Jaspers.
I ended up having to repeat 11th grade math my freshman year in college because I didn't place out of my math requirement because I didn't do well enough on the AP exam in high school.
Why did you take AP class that you weren't good at?
Because I thought I was smart, okay?
Go to Jaspers where they know exactly how smart they are.
Go to Jaspers where the prices are easy to figure out.
That's true.
They're right on the menu.
I don't think they put. They're one of those restaurants where they don't put the cents on there. It's just dollars, right? It's just says 15, 9, 8, 4, 7. Yeah,
they're not one of those
23.
They're not one of those snooty establishments that
right.
says see market price.
Well, I mean, if it's if it costs a lot to get the fish from the Atlantic Ocean or from the Gulf of Mexico, I guess you might have to pay for it if it's that good. But Deb Paquette, she knows what she's doing. She's the one.
What's nice about Jaspers is that they provide you a market price like meal at an affordable rate.
Oh, look at you.
So that you can feel like you're having a fancy meal and it won't hurt your wallet in doing so.
But it's not like cheap either. Like it's not, you're going to have to pay a little bit for it, but it's not going to break the bank and you're going to have an extremely nice meal, lunch or dinner if you're going out for a business lunch or watch a Saturday football game or whatever, a cocktail hour after work on a Tuesday, whatever. You got some Preds games on Thursday nights. You got U.S. men's national team on a Wednesday night. You might want to go pop by and have a meal, but you don't want to sacrifice food, but you also don't want to overspend. And that's where Jaspers hits that sweet spot.
Yes, also, exactly.
Also, no parking. They don't charge you. Wait, I take that back. There is parking. You don't have to pay for the parking.
Correct. There that is parking. You just don't have to pay for it.
Which is an extreme rarity in Nashville. And basically they're basically, changing the world one parking spot at a time is what they're doing at Jaspers.
Yes. Go to Jaspers where your emails won't be read by the NFL.
Hey, there you go. Go to Jaspers. They stay out of your inbox. All right, Adam, let's get into some of the expectations for and predictions for this team. We'll do final, division and points and all that stuff for all the teams. I'll get your thoughts on that. If you want to dive into the rest of the teams in the division, I recommend going and listening to a couple of episodes ago. Myself, Jeremy Gover, gave you a little crash course on all the other teams in the division. So go check that out. I'll get your thoughts on that here in just a second, Adam. But I want to do some rapid fire with you on some player expectations, some individuals. Some of these are numbers and over under. Some of these are just statements that you need to sort of tell me true or false and why, if that makes sense. You don't know any of these things that I'm going to ask you. It's all been kept very secret. A lot of cloak and dagger here. This is like, I'm like an Oklahoma.
I've never seen these questions before.
Nope. This is like an Oklahoma football practice. You're not allowed to see. And we'll close it down.
That reference went over everybody's head who's listening to this podcast.
It's all right. Just go look it up. You'll understand. All right.
At least my John Gruden email thing was topical.
Well, it happened.
Not
on,
really, but
it happened on Wednesday. Oklahoma. Never mind. Just go read about it. It's fascinating. A student got practice closed for all the other media by doing his job, but that's neither here nor there. You would like it. It's a lamestream sports kind of topic, Adam. You would like it.
Okay.
All right. All right. So, question number one. Over under, and I don't know how many games he's going to play because we just talked about the fact that he could be traded at the trade deadline. Regardless of how many games he plays, injury or trade or otherwise, Philip Forsberg, 1.0 points per game, over under.
Under. I mean, I know that we've talked about this before, and there was one season where he came close. I believe his career average is like 0.75 thereabouts. I don't expect him to be a point per game player, maybe a certain point in the season, but over the course of an 82 game season, I do not expect him to be a point per game player. So I will take the under on that particular question.
As Aaron Rodgers says, expiring contracts are one hell of a motivator.
Bingo.
He has a lot of reason to have the best statistical performance of his career, and I think it will happen. I think he's going to have the best statistical run of his entire career, and it leads to either a trade or him walking away at the end of the year.
So you're over.
That's my prediction. Yeah. I think he'll have like, I don't know, like 39 points in 37 games and we'll get traded because the Preds will be out of it. That's my official prediction.
Okay.
All right. Matt Duchene will have the best season of his Nashville Predators career.
And what's his current?
You like the metrics. So it doesn't have to necessarily be one number, goals and points or whatever.
So is this a true or false?
Sort of a true or false question. Just a general, this will be Matt Duchene's best performance in a Predator sweater.
Okay. Hold on. I'm pulling up his traditional numbers. So in his first season, he had 42 points in 66 games. His second season, he had 13 points in 34 games.
Yikes.
I'm going to say true. He does have his best statistical season, but the bar is pretty low.
The bar is very low.
So the answer is true. Matt Duchene will have more than 42 points in an 82-game season.
I agree. I think he'll have his best all-around season in a Nashville Predator sweater. But I just don't know how good that is. All right. Here's some traditional numbers for you. Philip Tomasino, 15 goals, 15 assists, 30 points. Over, under?
Under.
Interesting.
Way under. I don't think he's going to be, well, maybe not way under.
I mean, that's less than Kalle Yarnkrug produced.
You're assuming that Philip Tomasino was going to be on the team all season. I don't. I do think there's going to be a period of time during the season, a considerable period of time, where he's in the American League. So I'm going to set his over-under overall points at 20.
How long is that considerable chunk of time you're talking about?
At least, I think there's going to, I'm going to guess that there is going to be a period of at least 3 to 4 weeks where he's in the American League.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So I would set the over-under at 20 points.
Okay. So 10 and 10.
I might go under on that.
Wow. Okay. Ellie Tolvanen, 20 goals, 20 assists, 40 points. Over, under?
Under.
So I'm just way more optimistic.
Are these Vegas props?
No, they're not.
Okay. I'm going to say under. I think Tolvanen is going to basically fill the Kalle Yarnkrug production that's gone. He's like a 15-15 guy.
That's pretty close to 40 then.
Right, but it's 30. So, I mean, I'm going to put...
Thank you for that.
I told you, if it's simple math, I can do it. I'm going to set it at 30. I'm going to say, basically take the production vacated by Kalle Yarnkrug and give it to Ellie Tolvanen.
All he does is score goals, that guy, Kalle Yarnkrug. UC Saros, top five Vezina Trophy vote getter. True or false?
I will say true for that one.
All right, I got one. Okay.
I will say true. I think he proved a lot of people, proved to a lot of people that he can be a starting goaltender in the NHL. My friend and friend of the pod, Greg Wyshynski, had an interesting point talking about UC Saros in a column of his that, there were two things motivating UC Saros last year. He needed a new contract and, he was trying to get himself fully out of Pekka Rinne's shadow. Now he has a new contract and Pekka Rinne is gone. I'm not concerned about UC Soros's motivation level. The one thing that I do wonder about is that UC Soros has never started more than 35 games in a season in the NHL. And even during his time in the AHL, he wasn't getting significant starter reps. You know, I believe the one full year he played in the AHL, he was basically splitting starts with Marek Mazanich. So it wasn't like he started 50 games in the AHL. So as a professional, unless I'm forgetting something obvious, UC Soros has never had the full starter's workload over the course of an entire season. So that's the one thing to me that makes me wonder, you know, that gives me pause about UC, but I think he'll be able to handle it. Is he the 941 goalie that we saw in the second half of last season? I don't think so. But even if he's not, I still think he's good enough, you know, to merit top five Vezina consideration. So yes, I will say true. He finishes in the top five in Vezina trophy vote.
Okay. Ryan Johansson will have the best regular season of his Nashville Predators career, a la the Matt Duchene question. And you can use metrics, you can use underlying numbers, you can use advanced stuff if you want. Are we at the end of the season, just like Matt Duchene, saying, all right, that, okay, he wasn't $8 million worth, but that was his best season as a Nashville Predator?
That's a good question, just because I feel like the best Ryan Johansson we see is
not in a regular season game.
Exactly. If they're not making the playoffs, do we see Ryan Johansson at his best? And his best with the Predators was the 2018-19 season. He had 14 goals, 50 assists in 80 games. That's 64 points in 80 games. Over the past two seasons, he has a total of 58 points. He had 36 points in 68 games. Two seasons ago, he had 22 points in 48 games last year. So I think he gets up to at least 50 again, 50 points. So not the best season he's ever had in a Predator sweater, but much better than we've seen in recent history.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes for Duchene, no for Johansson, but they're both better this year than we've seen the last 2 years. That's what I would say.
I think that's fair.
It doesn't mean you're worth $8 million, but I do think there's something there. All right. I was going to say like three and a half is the over under on this, but I think I'm just going to let you decide on what you think is going to, you can kind of pick out the names you want here. And this will be the last one of all those young guys that we're talking about there. As we said, there are 10 of them. How many of them at the end of this season are we talking about as core players, foundational core building block star players, where, you know, I'm talking like, for me, it's Alexander Carrier, Ellie Tolvanen, and I would put probably Luke Cunningham in that conversation. I just like his game more than maybe everybody else. But of all these young guys, Tanner Jeannot, Fabro, Glass, Tomasino, Myers, Olivier, Trennan, how many of them at the end of the year do you view as core foundational pieces of the future of this organization? Does that question make sense?
And we're limiting it to young guys only.
Yeah, just the young guys that, so like Yossi's a core player.
Yeah,
so that comes a core player.
So which young players are we starting to mention in the same conversation as the Yossi's and the Soros's and the things of that nature?
And I'm not saying they're going to be that good, just guys that we
but when we list who are the core members of the Nashville Predators, Roman Yossi, Matias Ekholm, Yossi Soros, blank.
Who elevates themselves into that category?
I will say, I'll say Ellie Tolvanen.
Okay.
I don't think Tomasino will be there yet. I will add Luke Cunningham.
I agree.
I'm not sure about Cody Glass in year one, but maybe in year two or whatever.
Okay.
I'm not sure I see any.
I would say Alexander Carrier and not Dante Fabro. That's what I would say.
Yes to
Carrier, no to Fabro.
To me, the only, I think, slam dunk young players that we'll say we'll be mentioning in the same breath as the Yossi's and the Ekholms and the Soros's at the end of the season are Ellie Tolvanen and Luke Cunningham.
Wow. Yeah, I'm very high. I have Carrier above both those guys.
I think Carrier is a good player, and if he plays with Roman Josi, he's going to get plenty of PT.
Right.
I still think he might need a little. I think there might be a little more convincing that needs to be done there. I, on the other hand, speaking of predictions, and I'll tease this. Well, it's not actually being teased because the story's already up.
Oh, there you go.
But Joe Rexroad and I did our predictions for the season. We each handed out 5 predictions. And one of my bold predictions was that Luke Cunningham is going to lead the team in goals this year.
I love that. I love that prediction. I like this player a lot. I always thought I liked him more than you liked him. And now you're pulling a Cali Yarncroke on me.
The one thing that I was amazed by as I was doing some research. So Luke Cunningham scored 10 goals last year. 2 things. 8 of his 10 goals came in the final 17 games. So he came on really strong when it counted. And 2, all 10 of his goals came at 5-on-5. And he was the only player on the Predators who had double-digit 5-on-5 goals. So my thought is, if he gets more playing time this year, maybe get some power play time, he'll build on that. And this is the bold part. I'm penciling in Luke Cunningham for 20 goals this year.
I don't necessarily disagree with you.
So
I like his game a lot, man. He's a Granlin Hines kind of guy. Like, he just fits into the system. So, all right. So that's all I've got. Unless you've got some other individual questions you'd like to ask, could Josi be a Norris finalist? Of course he could, whatever. So let's dive in real quickly and wrap up here before the season starts with some team stuff. As of right now, here are your division winner odds. Colorado -250, Minnesota +650, Dallas +1200, Winnipeg +1400, St. Louis and Chicago tied at +1800, then a large drop off to the Nashville Predators at +7500, and then the Arizona Coyotes +30,000, which is insane. Team totals, total points, of course, for all these teams, and I'm gonna have to scroll here. Nashville 85.5 is the total. For the Nashville Predators, are you going over or under the 85.5? I will go over the 85.5.
Is it weird if I just say, like, I think that's exactly right?
Well, yes, you have to take a stand and be definitive and have a strong take, Adam. Come on.
All right, then I'll say slightly under.
Wow, that's a bad season.
But I think, but I don't, I think, what was the over under? What was this? What was it?
85.5.
I think 85 is about where I would put them, to be honest.
Well, of course it is. That's what Vegas is doing.
I know, but I'm saying that, like, that is, right. Sometimes you look at these things and go, man, that's way off.
Minnesota, 97.5.
Over or under?
That's the total, yeah.
Okay. Are you asking me if I'm going over?
I'm just, you said sometimes you look at them and you say, whoa, and I'm just going to rattle off all of them now and see if you say, whoa, to any of them.
Okay, let's start from the top.
Well, I don't have them in order.
Okay, fine, whatever. But I think I don't have a problem.
I want to say Colorado's like 110. It's insane.
I've got, honestly, that seems a little high for me. I know they're going to be good. I'm not sure they're going to be that good.
Winnipeg is 92.5. St. Louis is 92.5. Minnesota is 97.5. I actually think I like the under on Minnesota and the over on Winnipeg, actually. And then as I'm scrolling here to get to the last couple of ones, Arizona 67.5, Colorado is 110, Dallas is 95.5, Chicago is 91.5. This is what I don't understand. Chicago being at 91.5 and Nashville at 85. I feel like they're much closer teams than those numbers would indicate.
Yeah.
So,
but I think, but like some, like I said, sometimes I think you look at the over unders and you think to yourself, like, that's a ridiculous number. I mean, I think they've got the Predators in the right place.
All right. So we both have Colorado 1. We both have Arizona at 8, right?
Yes.
All right. Give me your order 2 through 7 with some, like, just a quick explanation.
Okay. So we have Colorado 1. I'm going to go Winnipeg 2.
Oh, you stole my thunder.
I like what Winnipeg did this offseason. I feel like the one thing that's been holding them back in recent years is their defense. They have a fantastic goaltender in Connor Hellebuck, but their defense, I mean, remember during the 2017 playoffs with Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey. They had a really good back end. It's been a problem. Grow up. But they traded for Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt this offseason. And, you know, their top forwards, you know, they've been, it's been the same group now for a few years, but they're just, it's really good. I mean, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Kyle Connor, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois. It's a good group. So I think the improvement on defense will be helpful. And I will have them finishing second to Colorado.
I have them second too, and I'm surprised you do. I think they're the most complete team outside of Colorado because of what you just talked about. Their upside scoring and in net now with an improved defense. I don't know. To me, I like that team at number two as well. I'm a little surprised you went with me there because it's clear that Minnesota, according to Vegas, that Minnesota is number two in the list. Who you got number three?
I'm going to put Minnesota at three. They're, you know, Minnesota Wilds have never really been an exciting team. But Kirill Kaprizov, you know, it's unfortunate that we in Nashville weren't able to watch him last year because, of course, the Wild were in the Pacific Division last season. But, you know, he signed a massive deal in the offseason, you know, a really exciting player. What I thought was hilarious was in the Wilds, I believe their preseason finale, Rem Pitlick skated on the line with Kevin Fiala and Freddie Goudreau. I did find that quite hilarious.
Sloppy seconds on a team that's going to finish 20 points ahead of us.
Don't forget Ryan Hartman. He's on that team too.
I'm just saying, you know, you use that phrase. I think it's hilarious.
Yes.
For a team that's going to be way ahead of the Predators.
You know, I think, you know, they've got some good players on that team too. And, you know, they bought out Parise and Suter in the off season, you know, but,
that's my question about them is, they've got some really young, talented pieces. They're losing so much veteran leadership. I want to know who fills those roles for that team.
No, Jared Spurgeon, Joel Eriksson-Ek. You know, I think, you know, Kevin Fiala, you know, has become a really good player for them and, you know, could continue doing that. So, you know, I'm trying to think of what their goaltending situation is. I can't, like, that's the problem. It's like off the top of my head, I can't name their starting goaltender. It's not Alex Stalock. He left. It's going to bother me.
Epic Phil. I have Dallas at number three, but that is purely a, if they are healthy play. I think
Minnesota's starting goaltender is Cam Talbot.
There you go. If Dallas is healthy, I think they have every piece of the puzzle to make a deep playoff run. They've shown they can do it. They've done it in the past. They've got high level talent that's making its last hurrah, its last stand for the Dallas Stars. A few of those pieces are going to be walking in the offseason that are very high level and very expensive. They brought in a guy like Suter. They got goaltending depth for days. There's a huge health question mark around this team. I get it. But if they are healthy, I think they are a team that's top three. So I've got Winnipeg, Dallas, two and three. I've got Minnesota at four. I think they're really good. There's some veteran presence stuff that I've got questions about, but that's my top four.
Okay. So you had Dallas three and Minnesota four?
Yep.
Okay. So I am going to take, I'm trying to think of who's left in the division. I'm going to take
St. Louis, Chicago.
I'm going to take Dallas. St. Louis. I'm going to take St. Louis fourth. I think they had a very savvy offseason. I like the addition of Brandon Saad. I thought the trade for Pavel Buchnevich from the New York Rangers was a good piece of business. Don't forget the real deal, James Neal, on a league minimum contract. You know,
I like Saad a lot too. I just wish he didn't always play in the same division as the Predators.
What's funny is that they traded for Brandon Saad before they signed James Neal. If it was the other way around, it would have been Neal before Saad.
Okay.
I think that's a Star Trek reference.
I don't get it.
Okay. Someone else will. I have St. Louis fourth. I have Dallas fifth.
Okay.
And here's
the real, so I've got St. Louis at five. So we basically kind of agree on the top five.
So to me, the thing about Dallas is they do, you know, we've seen the young talent they have, Miro Heiskanen, John Klingberg, Roope Hintz, Jason Robertson, But, you know, there are a lot of question marks about their older players. You talked about health, like Joe Pavelski and Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and Alex Radulov. And they got Ryan Suter after he was bought out. You know, the goaltending situation is interesting to me because they have four NHL goaltenders on the roster. Ben Bishop, I believe, is starting the season on LTIR. They have Anton Khudobin, Braden Holtby, and Jake Oettinger. And the saying about football quarterbacks is, if you have two starting quarterbacks, you don't have any. If you have four starting goaltenders, I don't think you have any either. So, you know, that's why I have Dallas fifth. I mean, okay. Say what you will about Jordan Binnington, but at least, you know, we know he's their starting goaltender.
See, I don't think it works that way in the NHL. I think you can, we've seen backups be a big part of deep Stanley Cup runs. So I like Dallas' situation. If biggest word in the English language, they're healthy. All right, so this is the real debate. Nashville and Chicago, 6-7. Vegas has Chicago at 91 points, Nashville at 85. There's a pretty big gap there in terms of odds to win the division as well. Lots of high-end talent for Chicago. Lots of new faces. Not really sure what's behind them on the depth chart. I think Nashville could finish sixth. I'd be okay with Nashville finishing sixth, Chicago seven. I don't know if I can put Nashville ahead of anybody else. I think six is their top high-level watermark for where I'm trying to put the Predators.
You know, for me, you know, when you look at Chicago, you're right. You know, what's their depth situation like? But when you compare the top players on the Blackhawks versus the top players on the Predators, I don't think there's much of a conversation. I mean, Patrick Kane, Alex DeBrincat, you know, they're getting back Jonathan Toews. And even if he's not full strength, Jonathan Toews, he's still pretty damn good. You know, say what you will about Seth Jones, but he's a good defenseman. I know he hasn't been great analytically in recent years, but and in goal, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury just won the Vezina Trophy. So, you know, to me, I feel like there are fewer question marks about the Blackhawks than there are about the Predators. So I have Chicago 6th, Nashville 7th. I think it's going to be close. Like, I think it's going to be a coin flip. Like,
yeah.
What did you say the difference was? 6 points?
Well, it's much larger, according to Vegas, than I think in our minds. I think
what does Vegas say? What does Vegas say?
91.5 points for Chicago, 85.5 for
Vegas. I don't think it's going to be a 6-point gap. Like, I could see it being like a 2 or 3 point gap.
Here's the real question for Nashville Predators fans. Because you have Nashville 7, Arizona 8. I don't see a case for this team to be higher than sixth. That's my problem.
There's so much that has to break right. You know, when you're a top team, you know, there are fewer questions, of course, but there are so many things that have to break right for the Predators to be better than that. I mean, this is just a sample. We've talked about it a little bit. You know, do Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson justify their salaries? Is UC Saros prepared for a 50 to 55 start workload that he's never had as a professional? Will the young players be up to the task? You know, who's going to score with regularity? You know, there are a lot of questions, and the fact that there are fewer questions like that about Chicago, I feel like, than for Nashville.
I agree. Not only does everything have to break right for your team, but then not just one of these teams, because it's very possible that one of Winnipeg, Minnesota, St. Louis, or Dallas just completely shits the bed and is one of the worst teams in the division. It happens all the time. Florida was great last year, and we didn't expect it in that division. The problem is you need not just one of them to do that. You probably need two of them to do that. And then all of the things that you just asked about this team all have to break right as well. So I think they can be way better, not way better. I think they're I would pick the over 85 points. I think they're going to be closer to 80, 88, 89, 90 points. I just don't see them being any much better than that. And that's like the, like sixth place, 89 points. Is like as optimistic as I can get for this team. But the idea is that you watch a bunch of young talented pieces develop over the course of the year. And you're excited about what they've got coming back next year. Right.
Right. I mean, this is, you know, you think about, you know, one team that had a similar situation to this. It's not a perfect comparison, but the Boston Bruins, I'm pulling up their history here to make sure I have the right years. So the Bruins qualified for this. They reached the Stanley Cup final in 2011. They beat Vancouver. The following year, They lost in the quarters. In 2012-13, they lost in the Stanley Cup final to Chicago. In 2014, they lost in the second round. Then they missed the playoffs two consecutive years in 2015 and 2016. By 2019, they were back in the Stanley Cup final. They lost to St. Louis. You know, now the players that the Bruins brought in, the younger players, David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy, chief among them, are much better than the younger players that the Predators have brought along. But, you know, they supplemented the core, which, you know, at the time was and still is for the most part, you know, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Krejci, Zdeno Chara, Tuukka Rask. They kept those players. And then they added youth around them. And once everything got going again, they ended up, you know, reaching the Stanley Cup final in relatively short order. So I feel like if you're the Predators, you're hoping of something similar like that. Like maybe, you know, you miss the playoffs this year, maybe you miss them next year, but in a couple of years, the younger players have matured. You've got reinforcements, namely Yaroslav Askarov, and you try again. What's interesting is we mentioned, we'll end on this note. We talked about the hopometer earlier in the show and talking about, you know, how fan optimism seems to be so low for this team. You know, talking to Predators fans, you know, yes, they're not optimistic about this team being a playoff team or being a serious contender in the next couple of years. But I do think there is excitement about the youth of the organization and actually seeing some of these younger players finally getting an opportunity to play. So will it lead to a playoff race or a playoff appearance? I don't think so, but at least it might capture people's attention. What I am curious about is if this season goes off the rails, similar to as it did in the first half of the season, is watching the youth of the organization enough of an appeal? Is it alluring enough to fans to keep watching the product? That's what I'm curious about.
You're going to have to prepare yourself for some blue seats in the crowd. I just think fans should be ready for that. Just be ready for that. That's all. Okay. That's all. Adam, where should people go to eat if they'd like to have a nice meal and not pay for parking and, you know, like, you know, watch a nice sporting event with a good cocktail named after a podcast? Where should they go?
Jasper's.
Where they stay out of your inbox.
Where they don't read your emails.
Jasper's, of course, on West End is the proud sponsor of this here podcast. They have a cocktail named the Gold Standard, named after this here podcast, which you can go consume at their bar while watching a Predators game while out without paying for parking. They're the next evolution of the sports bar. They're ending all kinds of epidemics around sports bars in this country. They're fighting the good fight, and they've got great food and a great place to watch the game. For Adam Vingan, where can people follow you, and what should people pay for?
Good journalism and at theathletic.com and on Twitter at Adam Vingan, which is free, but still pay for good journalism.
Start charging for all those dad jokes. My name is Braden Gall. You can follow me on Twitter at Braden Gall, at 440 Sports on Twitter and Facebook. Please share the product. Tell all of your Nashville Predators fans about this here show. We do appreciate it. That is how we grow it. And go to Jasper's, everybody. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the season. We'll be back next week. This has been the Gold Standard on the 440 Sports Network.